NFL Championship Week, the system quarterback put his team on his back, and the next coming looked like a deer in the headlights. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board.
How you doing, man?
Dude, it was an exciting football week, wasn't it?
Oh man, it was too close for comfort for me, man. I mean, those were both of my teams, the Niners and the Chiefs. And I got to tell you, man, the Chiefs showed up. I was like very impressed by how well they played against the Ravens. And the Niners, of course, they gave me blood pressure. They gave everybody blood pressure issues this weekend because they just seem to be asleep at the wheel sometimes, and then they wake up. So anyway. But yeah, it was great. How about you?
Whoa, hold on. We're going to talk about the game. But I'm doing well. But real quick, what did you think of Chase Young?
He didn't do as much as I think everybody hoped that he would. He hasn't really shown up yet, honestly. I mean, he's had glimpses, but hasn't really shown up.
Dude, there's a lot of video on him going around the internet right now. He was about as big a bum as you can get. I mean, he was just like a cheerleader. No tackling, no nothing, playing half-assed. You know, because I just assume Chase Young, Ohio State, number 2 overall pick, coming from Washington, got to be pretty good.
Right.
Somebody tweeted, a Chicago Bears fan, boy, I'm glad we got Montez Sweat and not Young. That's how bad he is. That's how he looked lazy out there, like he didn't want to play. You know, so it's a big hoopla. But anyway, we got a great show, everybody. I'm William Del Pilar with my good friend Eddie Aparicio here, and we got some NBA basketball. We're going to talk to All Stars. We're going to talk a little bit about the Clippers. We're going to talk a little bit about the Golden State Warriors and how they're doing since the death of Dejan Milojevic, and some NFL football, some head coaching hires, as well as the playoffs. So lots of heavy stuff. So let's get right on down to it. My friend Eddie, first of all, we're just going to talk about the NFL trade deadline and whatever rumors our big Eddie is hearing. But let's get right down to it, Eddie. The All-Star selections have been made, or I believe they've been made, correct?
Yeah, so the starting lineups have been already made. They were announced last week. So in the East, you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Tyrese Halliburton, and Damian Lillard. So that's the Eastern Conference starters. On the West side, you have LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Those are the starting five. Now, this Thursday is when they're going to announce the reserves, and there's 7 reserves in each conference. So all 14 names are going to be called out this Thursday on TNT, starting, I think it's at 4:30 or 5, right around that time frame. But yeah, that's what's gonna happen.
So Eddie, any surprises with the starting players on either team?
No real surprises on the East. I would say the biggest surprise is in the West because, you know, Stephen Curry has been essentially an all-star for I think 10 or 11 years in a row. I don't know exactly that, but it's like that, right? And, you know, a lot of these guys like LeBron James, I mean, they're kind of grandfathered in because they're very popular, good players still, right? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, you know, he's the one who got the nod. And, you know, the fan vote was higher for him. You know, Steph Curry is, you know, a legend, right? He's top 10 best all time, arguably, that we have seen in the NBA. But the team has been struggling. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, Stephen Curry, you know, wasn't being shown on, you know, ESPN or any of the sports outlets as much because the Warriors have been struggling. So, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think, deserves definitely recognition. But I think Stephen Curry, you know, has proven that he should be one of these grandfather guys, just like LeBron James. I think he should have been there.
That makes sense. Any expectations on the reserves, or what are your thoughts on the reserves? You think it's going to be slam dunk in the sense the known name, the known names, or any surprises you're expecting?
The West is the one I think that's going to be really, really hard to figure out. You know, which 7 reserves are going to make it. So I'll tell you my thoughts. I'll tell you who I think the 7 are going to be. I think for sure it's going to be Stephen Curry. He's definitely one of them. I would say Anthony Davis for the Lakers. I think he's having a really, really good year. I'll say Kawhi Leonard because, again, the Clippers are doing really, really good this year. Karl Anthony Towns for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I would say he definitely needs to be there just because the Timberwolves are the number one team in the West. So they need some representation, right? They also have Anthony Edwards, also of the aforementioned Minnesota Timberwolves. I think he deserves to be on there. Devin Booker would be one that I think will probably get the nod for the Phoenix Suns. And the last one, I think, is going to be Victor Wembanyama. That guy's got he's having a great rookie year. And I think fans love this guy. And just the fact that he's doing so well, you know, and just he's one of these like freak of nature type of athletes. He's so tall, so nimble, he could shoot. I think he's going to get in there. So I think those are the seven they're going to make. So, but you know, you have other guys that I haven't named that could be snubbed. You have like James Harden, who's came to the Clippers. He's had a really, really good season with the Clippers, and the Clippers are in the top three in the West. De'Aaron Fox for the Sacramento Kings. You know, he's the guy that, you know, showed last year that he's a superstar in the rising. And, you know, the Sacramento Kings are a playoff team. Another person from the Sacramento Kings is the Domantas Sabonis. I think he's deserving to be one of the reserves. So these are guys that I think are going to get snubbed. These are guys that I'm calling out that probably going to get snubbed. The other ones that I called are the ones that I think are going to make it. But the guys that I'm calling out right now, I think are the ones that are going to get snubbed. Paul George is another one I think could get a snub. And then the other one would be Chet Holmgren. Chet Holmgren is the other 7'2", 7'3" guy, just like Victor Wembanyama, same skill set. You know, OKC is one of the top teams in the West, and they have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander already in the starting five. You know, Chet Holmgren is probably deserving to be there, but I think he's going to get snubbed. Last guy I'll tell you is the Houston Rockets, Alperen Sengun. He's a guy from Turkey, a center, a rookie guy. He's actually second year. He's actually had a really, really good season. So those are the guys I think are going to get snubbed. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's going to get called out. In the East, the guys that I think are going to make it, I think the projected reserves, in my opinion, are going to be Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics. I think he's going to get going to be one of the ones. Paolo Banchero of the Orlando Magic. I think he's going to make it. Julius Randle for the New York Knicks. I think he's going to make it. Jalen Brunson is another one I think is going to make it from the Knicks. Tyrese Maxey of the 76ers, I think he's going to make it. Donovan Mitchell of the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think, is also going to make it. Now, the one that's kind of questionable, and this is only because I think he's a really good player, he may not get it, but this is my call. I'm going to say Scottie Barnes of the Toronto Raptors. I think he's had a really, really good season. Even though the Raptors are not necessarily a playoff team right now, but they're playing a lot better than everybody thought. Especially after they sold, you know, they traded Pascal Siakam as well as OG Anunoby, and you know they're doing pretty good considering those big moves. And then the guys that I think are going to get snubbed in the East, the guys I just mentioned, I think the ones that I project are going to get selected. But the guys I think are going to get snubbed, Jimmy Butler, I think for the Miami Heat, I think he may not make it. I don't think he played enough to warrant to be one of the reserves. Kristaps Porzingis of the Boston Celtics. I think he might get snubbed. There's a possibility he might get it over Scottie Barnes, but this is my call. I think Kristaps Porzingis is going to get snubbed. Bam Adebayo for the Miami Heat, I think he's going to get snubbed. Derek White for the Boston Celtics, I think he's another one that's going to get snubbed. And then I would say probably the last one would be Tyler Herro of the Miami Heat. I think he's going to get snubbed as well. So that's my call for this coming Thursday. The names are going to be called and the ones that are getting snubbed.
You know, it's the thing with the NBA All-Stars. It's actually there's more great players than there are slots. So a lot of deserving players get snubbed more so than other sports, I think. But yeah, okay. Real quick before we go on to the Clippers and how well they're doing, I saw an article. I didn't read it. I didn't have time, saying the NBA needs to do this to stop these high scorers. And I'm talking about obviously Joel Embiid with the 70 points. It came out of nowhere. It came out of nowhere for me to see. How do you pronounce his name? Always Luka
Doncic.
Doncic. He came in 70 points and
73.
Yeah, well, 73. Yeah. And what was funny was Victor Wembanyama was guarding Joel Embiid, right? And then he did a shot block the next night against Chet Holmgren or dunked on him or something, and somebody says, yeah, that makes up for his 70 point. And I'm like, no, it doesn't.
No way.
It doesn't. You know, no way. But But what's creating the opportunities for I mean, this is literally back-to-back 70 points. Look, we are older. Gentlemen, we're not young 20-year-olds. And when's the last time we saw something like this happen in NBA history? Like, literally back-to-back nights of 70-point games.
I don't think this ever happened. I mean, in the same night, you had Joel Embiid, who scored 70 points, and then you had Karl Anthony Towns, who scored 60 points.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever happened in the NBA, ever in the same night. And then, let alone a week apart, you have, like, five or six players that are 60 plus or more, you know, in the last week. And it's crazy. The scoring right now is crazy. I don't know what it is.
So, yeah. Eddie, you got a job. You got to find out. What, are these guys on drugs, the good stuff? Are the refs giving them the call? Or, you know, but I mean, that's actually great for the sport. I mean, you know, to see it. I mean, offense is, I think that's why soccer never takes off here. You know, it's like this boom, 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 boom. And an hour later, it's 1-0. You know, Americans don't like that. But yeah, it's exciting for basketball. All right. So James Harden, so far, the trade looks phenomenal. He's playing lights out. If he, you know, I'm not a James Harden fan. I'll say that. But right. When I saw, because I knew he was snubbed, obviously I looked him up for the All-Star selection, and I'm like, he's having a great year compared to the last few years, you know, and he gets snubbed this year. But what's your reason for the Clippers and how well they're doing, and can it continue? And give me your prediction. I won't hold you to it, but as of today, where do you see the Clippers ending up at based on how they're playing right now? But we'll save that part for last. Why are they doing so well right now?
Well, I'll tell you this. So the trade for James Harden happened in October 31st. Actually, it was Halloween night when that trade was announced. And then the very next game, the Clippers lost. Then the next five games after that, so they lost six games in a row with James Harden.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, they lost six games in a row. And then Tyronn Lue made this adjustment where, you know, he had Russell Westbrook come off the bench and not start with James Harden. He brought him off the bench. And that adjustment seems to have made the team work. And since then, you know, the Clippers have gone 27-7 since that adjustment, 20 games above 500. It's ridiculous. Wow. They are the second team in the West, only one game behind both the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So they're essentially second right now because those two teams are tied. And looking from a defensive and offensive rating standpoint, I was kind of looking at some of the analytics of why the Clippers are doing so well. You know, if you look at their offensive skill set, I mean, they have three, you know, probably Hall of Fame players right there in James Harden, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard. They're the big three, just like the Warriors have the big three. These guys are all, you know, really, really talented players. But if you look at their offensive rating, they're the fourth rated offense in the entire NBA. So they're behind the Celtics. Excuse me, they're behind the Pacers first, Celtics second, and then the Milwaukee Bucks third as far as offensive rating. And
that's on the defensive side. Eddie, though, you're getting into the stats and the data and the overall, but what's making them play better? Why did that lineup change work for them? What chemistry did that add or take away that has put them on this win streak?
They have a better scoring threat at point guard because Russell Westbrook, as good as he is or was, he isn't what the Clippers need at point guard. He is a hustle kind of drive kick type of player, really can't shoot very well. And then James Harden he's different. James Harden can shoot and he's a threat offensively and he's a bigger guy, right? He's a harder player to defend for opposing teams. So I would say that what the style of play has changed a little bit, where they weren't necessarily a drive and kick kind of a team right. anymore, like, you know, with Russell Westbrook. They became more of a drive and kick, but also can shoot from outside, so they're harder to defend because, you know, James Harden with the ball in his hand, he's a nightmare for most teams just because he can drive and he can also shoot. Russell Westbrook can only really drive. So I think that's what opened up the offense, you know?
Is it what
and then, you know, James Harden, you know, he's not really a defensive guy, but I think, you know, you can scheme. You can scheme for him, and he's shown that he can play in that system. They're doing very, very well. So getting back to the analytics, they are the 11th best defense in the NBA. The top three defensive teams right now are Minnesota Timberwolves, Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Boston Celtics. So they're not in the top three, but from a net rating standpoint, you know, that's essentially, you know, the offensive rating minus the defensive rating through the top four, you know, essentially behind the Celtics, Thunder, and Sixers. So, you know, they're just playing phenomenally, honestly. And on Saturday, they just beat the Boston Celtics by 19 points when they were on the road. You know, Boston was at home, and Boston right now is considered the best team in the NBA. You know, both from an offensive, defensive rating standpoint, they're number one in both categories. So the fact that they did that, I mean, that's any given night in the NBA, but that's impressive for, you know, a Clippers team to come into Boston and beat that team by 19 points. So, you know, the other thing is Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they're playing more, you know, whereas last year they kept bench, you know, they always get rest, here and there, rest. Now the NBA is kind of, you know, clamp down on that a little bit, and now you're seeing these guys play more. So, you know, this team's legit. I think they're going to be competing for a championship. They're right now, I think, the fourth odds-on favorite to win the championship. You know, essentially behind the Boston Celtics, the Denver Nuggets, and the Milwaukee Bucks are the top three as far as the betting man. You know, that's who Vegas thinks are going to win. And then number four is the Clippers. So this team is good. And of course, here I am talking about them tonight and on this run that they're – and then they lose tonight. They lost on the road against Cleveland Cavaliers. They lost by 10 points to Cleveland tonight. But, you know, hey, they've won 27 games, you know, out of 34 since then. And now it's, you know, 27 out of 35. So it's still a very, very good record. So the Clippers are legit.
So I don't want to move on yet. We need to move on. But I need to know this is possible because of a head coach that had the cojones to go, we're doing this change. And it's going to be for the better. So tell me real quick about the head coach. Because there's a lot of head coaches for example, the Lakers have not been run by the Lakers for the last 3 to 4 years. They've been run by LeBron, you know. So what makes this coach what gave him the cojones to do this? His job or his nature, his character? Tell us a little bit about him for a few seconds.
I mean, Tyronn Lue is the championship level coach. He's won a championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's coached LeBron James, right, into a championship, mm-hmm. you know. And then he also was a former player, so he gets a lot of credibility from that point standpoint. So,
respect.
And you know, he's got the owner's you know, he's got the owner's ear. The owner, Steve Ballmer, thinks very highly of Tyronn Lue, and you know, he's endorsed him to be the guy, and for good reason. The guy's a good coach. He's a good X's and O's coach. He's won it before, and he's been a player. So right there, that's the reason.
And finally, Russell Westbrook. We're talking about Westbrook, aren't we? Isn't that the name Westbrook. He hates? Yeah, Westbrook. Dude, two people out there. Eddie's not online. He's not on social media. But Eddie, that's all they called him last year. I guess when he was with the Lakers or 2 years ago, and it was driving him crazy. People were just typing Westbrook. Yeah. But anyway, that's why I was chuckling earlier because the light bulb. Like, oh yeah, Westbrook. You know, when you said he's not an offensive threat, I'm like, Eddie just made an enemy. All right. Okay. So let's move on. Let's talk to Golden State Warriors since the death of Dejan Milojevic. And you wanted to talk a little bit about that in terms of how the team's doing.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, prior to, you know, again, it's an unfortunate, tragic situation what happened. You know, the Warriors took a couple games off. They actually took 9 days. It was 9 days in between the game that they last played and then the game they played since his death. So they came back, played against Atlanta. That, I think, it was like last week. And, you know, they came out very inspired. They played very hard. I mean, it was, I don't know if you saw the ceremony, that they did when, you know, for this guy, Dejan Milojevic, but they had his family in the stands, his two kids and his wife. They did this tribute video for him and they kind of like did the kind of like almost like a funeral procession where every player had a jersey that, you know, it was their number, but the last name of Milojevic was all on every jersey. And then, you know, every player took that off. And they put it on a chair, and this chair that's, you know, is going to be reserved for him with that, you know, it has his name on there. It has a brate. Brate means brother in Serbian. And they have that word there because that's what he used to say, hey, brate, right? So everybody wore these brate shirts, and there's a chair that has brate, and it had like a white rose on there. And every player brought their, you know, jerseys and put it on there. So it was a pretty moving ceremony that they did. It was tough to watch for a lot of people. It was very moving. So anyway, you know, having that heavy heart kind of ceremony and then have to play a game, it was incredible how the Warriors pulled it off. And, you know, Steve Kerr just said, you know, just get lost in the game. You know, this is what he would want you to do. So get lost in the game. And they showed up and they played well, right? So since then, like I said, you know, the Warriors have been kind of dealing with, you know, a lot of, you know, turmoil. You know, he had the suspension by, you know, Draymond Green. He was suspended for, you know, quite some time, missed a lot of time. I think he's missed more time than played games this year, honestly. But when he's out on the court, he's actually having a really good season. I mean, when he's playing arguably his best basketball. I mean, you could say it's pretty close to the very best that he's played right now. He's playing very, very well. But then you had, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who's been kind of disappearing on and off. He's been playing very good in the last three games. Like, this is the old Andrew Wiggins back. And then you have, of course, Curry, who's just lights out. And all the rookies have been playing. But the biggest emergence, in my opinion, has been Jonathan Kuminga. Jonathan Kuminga has emerged as a budding star in the league. I mean, the guy's athletic, you know, freakishly athletic. He's 21 years old. He's just got a big, strong body, and he's able to, you know, take people to the rack, you know, and he can shoot decently. He's not like a great shooter, but this is what's happened is that the Warriors seem to have woken up. You know, they won against Atlanta, but then they lost back-to-back heartbreakers, you know, by 1 point to the Sacramento Kings. Then on Saturday night, they lost by 1 point to the Lakers, probably considered the best game in the season was on Saturday night against the Lakers and the Warriors. That was a ridiculous game. You had to watch it. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it because it was like unbelievable. You have LeBron James having a 30 something point triple double at age 39, right? It's incredible. And then Steph Curry scored 46 points. So it was just like a show. But this team is playing with a lot more energy. Steve Kerr, you know, in the press conference after the game, pretty much said that, you know, I believe in this team. I think that if we play like this, we're going to turn the season around. I trust this team. It almost kind of gave the message that they don't want to make a trade. Like, he wants to keep this group together because they just haven't played enough together, right? They have to get, you know, gelling. They have to gel together, play more. But the trade deadline's coming up here, and you know, in about 10 days now, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens because, you know, we're going to see tomorrow when they play the 76ers, a big, strong team with Joel Embiid. If they are able to compete and maybe even win, I don't think they're going to make any trades because I think that they're starting to get some rhythm and playing well together. So anyway, that's what I wanted to point out about the Warriors. You know, the Warriors are still, you know, a hot topic because they're, you know, they've won, you know, four championships in the last 6 years. So, the last 10 years. So, you know, they're still relevant and, you know, they're very popular teams. So that's what we're thinking about. So
as long as they have Steph Curry and Draymond Green, they'll always be relevant. Steph Curry in the good way, Draymond Green in the news way. But, as far as Dayon, it's kind of sad. And, you know, with all the vaccine talk and all this, he had a heart attack. He was vaxxed. I'm glad to see people are recognizing him as an individual and not as part of this conspiracy theory. Because at the end of the day, because I'm a believer in the fact that the vaccine is killing people. But end of the day, these men and women who are passing for whatever reason, because we'll never find out the truth, they have families, they have loved ones, and we can never forget that because it's a friend of mine just passed away, my podcast co-host for my political show. So you just never know when your time is going to come. So for all the conspiracy theorists, I get it. I become part of it. But just remember, these people have families. So don't besmirch their name. So good for him and good for the Warriors that they're using this in a positive way. And some people are going to go, it's only a game. It's not the fact that it's a game. It's how somebody can inspire others in their own way. You know, so good for him. All right, let's segue to that real quick. Let's take a couple minutes. What's the latest you're hearing on the trade rumor for Eddie?
You know, nothing's really changed on that front. You know, since the last time we spoke, it's been kind of somewhat quiet. Honestly, I think there's a lot of calls are being made. A lot of, you know, people are speculating. You know that, you know, certain guys are going to be moving to certain teams, but right now, you know, it's been kind of quieter than I anticipated. So I would say that, You know, the you know, it started out with a bang with, you know, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, getting traded. Then you had Terry Rozier. You know, that was one of the names that I pointed out, you know, in our last podcast that I think would be traded, and he did. He went to the Miami Heat. So you're going to see, I think, more and more here probably evolve in the next week, you know, right before the trade deadline. And the trade, like I said, it's about 10 days away from now. So I would say we're probably going to have a lot more rumors to talk about probably in the next podcast next week. So it's pretty been pretty quiet other than those big those three moves. So I don't want to speculate more other than what we've already talked about, some of those names from last time. There's going to be some trades. I would say probably maybe about six or seven more, in my opinion, are going to happen in the next week. There's already been three. I think my call is about 10. So I think that's what's going to happen in the next week. You're going to see it happen in about, I think seven more moves are going to happen next week.
So what we're going to have to do is dedicate a full show to breaking the teams down and doing a reset after all these trades. How do you, you know, after the reset and all the trades, where does Eddie Aparicio see the top teams in the playoffs? All right. And that closes out our basketball segment. I like that. Efficient, insightful, and touchy. Two Latino machismo men. We can be very touchy and compassionate. Let's get on over to another topic. America's game. America's pastime. And no, I'm not talking about that pathetically slow-moving game called baseball. I'm talking about football. It was championship week, Eddie. Before we get to championship week, I want to take 5 minutes to talk about the coaching changes. I'm going to run down the one. We're not going to talk about the Raiders because they hired Antonio Pierce a couple weeks ago. The Titans hired the Bengals offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, the son of Bill Callahan, former NFL coach, one of the best offensive line coaches in our generation, in our lifetime. The one thing I will say about Brian Callahan, he didn't call the plays in Cincinnati. Zach Taylor did. So he got the job without actually doing the job. I'm not a big fan of players like that, but he's got pedigree and he's got the resume. The New England Patriots, as we talked about, Gerard Mayo, 37 years old, became the youngest coach. Now, let's talk about the new hires. Raheem Morris. I don't know if you remember, Eddie, last week. I say this poor guy, he's become the minority, the black guy who all the teams want to interview to fulfill the Rooney Rule. And I'm not a fan of his only because of his record. With the Buccaneers, he was 17-31, 354 winning percentage. This was my era. So I read a story where the writer, very progressive, very leftist, just flat out lied. Said the Bucs set him up to fail. He did this, he did that. Well, it's just nothing but pure lies. Then he was with the Falcons as the interim coach after Dan Quinn got fired, 4-7, 364 winning percentage. So he would not have been at the top of my list. However, we're on the outside looking in. So everything we hear about him is he's a great interview, well-beloved individual, and I do believe in redemption, and I do believe in second chances. So even though I say he probably wasn't on the top of my list, I'm like, well, let him prove himself, just like Belichick did, just like other coaches. And he's young, and if he's so well-liked, he's going to have an opportunity. My only concern, Eddie, is Arthur Blank. Arthur Blank is seen as one of the nicer owners, one of the more compassionate owners with his players, with the community. Everybody loves him. But it doesn't matter. A meddling owner is still a meddling owner, and he tends to meddle. And when owners meddle, you get what you get with the Atlanta Falcons. And the reason I bring that up is Raheem Morris and the general manager, they're going to answer to Arthur Blank, not the CEO, Rich McCabe. And to me, when the owner starts to meddle in that way, that's not good for the coach. Now, the person who disagrees with me is the person who's best friends with the owner. So I just went through this in a big podcast on RG3 and how he was lying about Jay Snyder or Jay Gruden. And Jay Gruden killed him with one tweet. He's like, Kirk Cousins was better. The Browns didn't want you. Neither did the Ravens. And that kind of ended it because it was what you call another truth. But my point is RG3 aligned himself with Dan Snyder and got Shanahan fired. So that's the problem with meddling owners. They have too much power and the pawns on the chessboard tend to play it. So I worry about Raheem Morris for that. But outside of that, I can't argue with the hire. I don't care how good Raheem Morris is. If they don't get a quarterback there, the Falcons are going to suck. Any thoughts on Raheem Morris?
No, you covered it, man.
All right. And what do you think of Bill Belichick? That was his job, they say. Now, Bill Belichick, they say the reason he lost out on it is because he did not like Rich McKay, who was the CEO, and he did not want to answer to Rich McKay. And Belichick controlled everything in New England. The problem with all of that, and the reason I think he was not hired, is Bill Belichick, the general manager, got Bill Belichick, the head coach, fired. So I think Arthur Blank, he listens to his people. That is one good thing he does. I think they said, look, he wants too much power. Look at all that power and what happened to that team after Brady left. His drafts were exposed. He has not had a good draft. So that's why I think he was snubbed. You have your own thoughts into why he may have been snubbed?
You know, I think that he's established himself as a pretty strong personality, kind of take it or leave it, you know, as my way or the highway kind of a coach. He wants to control. He's got the, in his mind, the track record of excellence over 20 years, you know, remove Tom Brady. This is what he thinks, right? We all know Tom Brady is the reason why he got, you know, what he got. But, you know, Bill Belichick has some, you know, he had some say in it too. It's not all Tom Brady. You know, he's a defensive minded coach. Has a system, you know, had some offensive coordinators that worked well with Tom Brady. And, you know, a lot of those offensive coordinators tried to get head coaching jobs and it didn't necessarily pan out as head coaches, elsewhere. So it definitely, I guess you could say it's more Tom Brady, but Bill Belichick wants to have the power. He feels his ego's big and he feels like he deserves it because he's shown that he's, you know, built an organization, you know, from the ground up because, you know, New England wasn't very good when he first came on board and then turned him around. You know, he made some big roster moves that kind of shook people up. Like, what are you doing? Why are you getting rid of this guy? Right. But this is him. So he wants the power. And, this is probably why he got snubbed because, you know, I don't think, you know, like you said, some of these meddling owners want to have some power and they don't want to relinquish it. And, you know, this is what Belichick is.
I don't think he's going to get another head coaching gig. I mean, I'm not going to rule it out, but I think at his age, at 71 or 72, his track record as a GM, and if he still wants that, I think teams are going to shy away. All right, the Carolina Panthers, they hired the Buccaneers offensive coordinator Dave Canales. I don't like this hire. Dave Canales has 13 seasons with the Seahawks from 2010 to 2022. He started out as a quality control coach. Then his pedigree came up through the quarterback's ranks, quarterback's coach, then receiver's coach, then a passing game coordinator, and then he became the Buccaneers offensive coordinator. I wasn't impressed with the Bucs. Look, Baker Mayfield did a great job, but they were in a weak conference. You know, it's not like they were lighting everything up and they were competing against the Niners or the Cowboys or the Eagles. No, they were in the worst division of football. So I think Dave Canales got this job because he has ties with Dan Morgan, who is the general manager, the president of football operations for the Panthers. He's a new hire too. They worked for 8 seasons in Seattle. But I also think he was one of the few candidates who wanted the job. You know, now, there is never a job that somebody does not want in the NFL because those are very prestigious jobs, no matter how bad the owner. But I think any head coach that can become a Bill Belichick, a Bill Parcells, a Tom Landry, you know, a head coach like that who has that potential, none of them wanted this job because David Tepper is arguably the next Dan Snyder. He's a quarterback. I don't want to say he's a quarterback guru. I don't know if he is or not. But he did work wonders with Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield. But those were already established veterans who knew the NFL, who knew they were on their last shot, who had something. Can he turn Bryce Young around?
Remains to be seen. I don't know. Bryce Young is a talented guy. Number one pick. You know, I don't know much about Dave Canales, honestly. So I really can't tell you whether or not he can unleash or unlock the potential of Bryce Young. You know, he's a talented guy and someone will find a way to make that guy work. And if he doesn't, then he's not going to be in the league that long because of his stature. He's a small guy, right? Smaller guys, right. You know, typically don't do very well as a quarterback in the NFL unless they are really, really good at reading defenses like a Drew Brees, right? Drew Brees is that type of guy, you know, so we'll see. But he deserves a fair shot. And if this guy can unlock him and unleash his potential, by all means. But I just don't know enough about Dave Canales to comment on whether he can.
I'm wondering if Bryce Young is actually an NFL star to be. He's small, undersized. The game looks faster than what he can adapt to it right now, but I'll give him a half a season left. And I love the Bill Walsh theory. Give him 20 some odd games, and we'll see what he does. Real quick, going back to the Atlanta Falcons, one good thing about Raheem Morris, they have about $35 million in cap space. Not a lot, but it could go up to about $45 million if they cut Taylor Heinicke and Mike Hughes. As far as the Panthers, have about $24 million in cap space for free agency. They had some cap hits, so they're not looking pretty, too. So both these head coaches don't have a lot of money, but they're not in the negative. Let's go to the main one here for a couple minutes before we move on to the games. The Chargers, they got their guy. I think the Chargers had no choice. With that team and that roster, they had to make the big proven hire. And when I say proven hire, Steve Spurrier, I'm drawing a blank, the Alabama coach who just retired.
Nick Saban.
Two colossal NFL pro failures. They stunk. They're useless. They were about as good as the crap we step on walking in the yard picking up our dog's poo. I say that purposely because college is about boys. The NFL is about men. Urban Meyer's another failure. But Jim Harbaugh, listen to this. First of all, I spent 9 seasons at Michigan. Obviously, he culminated in a national championship. He went 89-25, 8 bowl games, 6 seasons with 10-plus wins, 2021 AP College Football Coach of the Year, 3 Big Ten titles. Again, the big thing is the national championship. 4 years as the Niners head coach, 2011-2014, 44-19-1, 3 straight, we forget about this, 3 straight championship games, a Super Bowl appearance, and he lost to his brother in 2012. Kaepernick with the bonehead play towards the end. Remember, the lights went out too. The game was delayed for a while.
Yep.
Before all this, he was the head coach for the USD Toreros and the Stanford Cardinals. And he was a winner with the Toreros. In fact, Josh something, I forget his name, became a long-term
Josh Johnson. Josh.
You know, I can't – maybe that is it. But he became a long-term backup, had a great career. He was his age quarterback there. Okay, yeah, Josh Johnson. Okay, got it. Okay, so he's a winner, you know. However, the downside, Eddie, they are $28 million over the salary cap, and they're projected to be anywhere from $46 to $55 million over when you factor in their projected cap hit and then needing money to sign the rookie class. You know, Khalil Mack, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, and Mike Williams, they make up about 59% of the projected cap hit. Khalil Mack's too old, 17 sacks, but you got to look at it in context. Look at some of the games he got those multiple sacks against crappy teams. You know, I just say look at Von Miller in Buffalo. I think he had no sacks this year. All he was a salary cap waste for the Bills, you know. Joey Bosa, I think he's got 14 games in 2 seasons. You know, Mike Williams, ACL tear. Keenan Allen, he's going to be 32 years old. If that's me, I'm looking to get a clean slate. Whack them all. Trade them if you can. Get the draft picks. Build the team you want. I don't know what they're going to do, though. What are your thoughts?
I mean, they do have a lot of talent in that team. So if anybody can do this, it would be him, because Jim Harbaugh has been able to be a culture changer. He's definitely instills a certain way about the team and people follow him. And, you know, I think he just wears out, you know, he wears people out in time, but, you know, he's able to instill, you know, a system that works and people, you know, who has it better than us? Nobody. He does that with everybody, and everybody, you know, just jumps on board to play for the guy. But they definitely have talent, you know, on that team. So, you know, yeah, are they older? Yeah. But, you know, they can play. So, you know, we forgot about their running back. Their running back is also good. Austin Eckler is a pretty good.
Well, he's old, though.
He's not ridiculously old, but he's like, you know, he does have a lot of, you know, he always gets injured, but he's a very, very good running back when he's not, you know, injured.
He's a very good fantasy running back, but at the end of the day, here's the difference. The The 49ers were able to run in between the tackles. The Detroit Lions gave up on it. The Ravens didn't even have a rushing game. And the Chiefs, Isaiah Pacheco, he only had a 2-point-some-odd yards per carry this weekend, but they kept giving him the rock, and he was getting those tough yards in between the tackles. Austin Eckler can't do that. And when you get the elite football time, i.e. the playoffs, you have to have that. So I have never been impressed with the running back who looks nice in the West Coast-style offense but can't run between the tackles. Bill Walsh would have a cow with those type of guys. People forget Roger Craig, then Ricky Waters, and then Derek LaVille could not run in between the tackles. But he looked good with those little screen passes and all that, but when they needed him to get the tough yards, he couldn't. And that's my problem with Austin Eckler. Again, I have a fine line given to me by the military. There's great players, and then there's greatness. We're going to talk about that with a couple of examples. But let's move on, though. My final comment on the Chargers is I think Jim Harbaugh can finally make them a Super Bowl winner. And I fully expect that if Justin Herbert can stay healthy. Just because – and you're right. I relate to Jim Harbaugh because I am that guy. I have a five-year window at my gigs before we both wear each other out. That's what happens when you're demanding. That's what happens when you don't accept mediocrity. It's what happens when you call people out. And I'm the type of guy who go, no, stop, you're lying. This is what we agreed upon, and you're using this as an issue. And that wears on people. People don't like it. But to me, I look at it like, you're lying to me. I'm going to call you out. But people said, well, you shouldn't be so harsh. I'm like, harsh? He's the one who, you know. So it goes back and forth, but I've accepted the fact, human nature, that wears on people. So good luck to Jim Harbaugh. I think he'll be a success. Let's get to NFL Championship Week. The Chiefs defense contains the Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson for an easy win. The score may have been 17-10, and they were only one big play away, but the Chiefs controlled that game. I think the knock on Lamar Jackson, and we talked about this all season long, is, you know, his big test is in the playoffs. Can he get past the hump? And remember last week, I told you, some people were saying, well, he got past the hump. He got past the first round. I'm like, no, he's got to get to the Super Bowl. Sure enough, all the negative talk is on Lamar Jackson. Let me give you some key points here, and I want to get your take. Obviously, and to the audience out there, Eddie and I have been talking about the defense, how the Chiefs are a different team, how the Bills were a different team versus their all-star gunslinging quarterbacks, how the defense and the rushing attack. I read an article, I want to say it was on NFL.com, and you know, nobody talked about the defense of the Chiefs, you know, for the last couple of weeks, so it was a surprise. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, fool? That's what we talked about. So the defense was the key to the win. Yeah. They blitzed Lamar Jackson 20 times, a pressure rate of 37. Now, what the author did not talk about is it wasn't about sacking him. It was about clogging up his rushing lanes. So he couldn't find the rushing lanes. And that's what I think won the game. He was a deer in the headlights. Now, bear this out with me, Eddie. I tell people, look, in the pros, the one thing I learned when I sold my business and I worked with Wall Street people is they're no different than we are. They just got a different degree, but they're no smarter, no dumber than we are. They're just in a different world because they have the network connections. And the reason I say that is because Lamar Jackson is in year one of this offense. So it's not second nature to him yet. So when you got a defense blitzing you 50% of the times and your lanes to run to escape are closed, and this is your first year in the offense, a lot of your reaction is not as natural as it will eventually be. And nobody has talked about that. Everybody's talked about he failed this, he failed that, couldn't get past. I kept saying, look, they're a year away. And I think this game, the Chiefs did just that. They took advantage of the fact a quarterback in his first year of this new offense and put in the pressure situation he was put in, his mental acuity to rapidly think. Once his running lanes were gone, that tested him and slowed him down enough for the Chiefs defense to be able to take advantage. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, Guillermo, we did talk about this last week. And for the audience, you can go back to Points on the Board last week where we talked about this. It's actually Points on the Board number 69, where we talked about this towards the end of the podcast, where you were asking for my opinion on what I thought was going to happen. And my gut, man, you know, I told you I'm a Chiefs fan, you know, second after the Niners. Chiefs are my second favorite team. My gut was telling me the Chiefs were going to actually give this team fits from a defensive standpoint. And I talked about that. And you said, you know, if the Chiefs D can't contain Lamar Jackson, the Chiefs will win. And that's exactly what happened. You know, I you know, you asked for my call on what I thought, who was going to win. I kind of, you know, the Ravens had an unbelievable defense. And I should not have gone against Patrick Mahomes and being able to, you know, figure out that puzzle, which he did, right? He was able to move the ball. You know, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes were able to move the ball against that Ravens deep, and the Chiefs deep did contain Lamar Jackson. I just wish I would have said, you know, the Chiefs are going to win when I said, you know, the Ravens, only because I thought they handled the Niners pretty well. And I thought the Niners were at the time the best team in the NFL, and then the Ravens were at that point. But, you know, I think the Chiefs D it's championship material. I mean, that D is good, and it showed up big time against, you know, arguably probably the hardest guy to defend in the NFL in Lamar Jackson.
Right. So I think the only thing people are blaming Lamar Jackson, and they should. You know, the quarterback gets too much credit when they win. They beat up on the quarterback too much when they lose. But I think they went in with a game plan. We're gonna put this game on Lamar's back, and they should have. The reason I say that is because of the rushing attack, and I have it here right now. So the Ravens have pounded the ball all season, Eddie, and that's how they run up the score, because that rushing attack just wears that defense down, and eventually a game that's 24-17 becomes, you know, 35-17, you know, just because of the rushing attack, the pounding. You know, so they averaged 31.5 rush attempts in the season. Their last three games, they averaged 27.7. And now, granted, they had some of their backups playing the final game of the season. And once you get into the playoffs, it's stiffer competition, you know. But in this week, they only had 16 attempts. So that was about a 10 rush attempt drop. Now, some of it's because they were behind at the end. They had to throw.
Right.
But it seems like they wanted Lamar Jackson to win this game, and I think they did the opposite by doing that. By putting it in Lamar's hands to win, they cost themselves a game because they didn't let the rushing attack run loose. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, they made Lamar Jackson work. The Chiefs did. They weren't able to establish that running game, you know, because Lamar Jackson is about 80% of the running game. They took away his running lanes, and they forced him to become this, you know, new pocket passer, right? This new and improved pocket passer. And it shows that he still needs some, you know, there's room for improvement there. He still is learning to work in this new concept of being a pocket passer when he historically hasn't really been that. This was his first year where he really established that, and the Chiefs wanted, you know, they said, okay, prove it to us that you're a pocket passer. We're going to take away your running lanes, and that's, I think, what you saw is that he's still not there yet.
Right, and speaking of the running lanes with the rushing, so the Ravens during the season averaged about 156 yards per game, the regular season. Their last three games, 139. Now, again, their last two games were playoff teams. You know, it's a lot stiffer in competition, you know, and their final game was with backups. So that's a drop of about 20 yards. That said, they only had 81 yards, and people are saying that they're blaming the offensive coordinator. Like, yeah, you can give some of the blame, but I'm kind of getting sick and tired of going on social media. Nobody wants to give the Chiefs defense credit for the fact they only had 81 yards per game. They shut that rushing attack down, and they also owned the time of possession, 37 minutes, 30 seconds to 22 minutes, 30 seconds. The Chiefs sacked Lamar Jackson four times. Their third down efficiency was only a pathetic 27%. They turned the ball over three times. One of his passes was thrown into triple coverage. That was my dude looks like a deer with the headlights on him, you know? And Travis Kelce showed up. They couldn't stop Travis Kelce. And that was
a monster.
Won. Yeah, yep. He went 11 for 116 yards, a touchdown on 11 targets. So Lamar Jackson is now 2-4 in the playoffs, no Super Bowl. Stephen A. Smith, he choked, which is, I think, kind of rough. But in technicality, it's true. But the way he said it is if it's all on him, and it wasn't. The Ravens are built to win now. Here's what people don't realize. This is when I get angry. I'm like, this is why I'm freaking good. The Browns, I'm saying the Browns, the Ravens, I'm like Chiefs, Browns, Ravens, the Ravens are built to win now because Lamar Jackson, up until this year, was on a contract that did not hurt their salary cap. He's got a big time contract now, and his new contract carries cap numbers anywhere from 32 to 75 million over the next four seasons. So now they don't have the luxury of this great super defense. They're going to start losing players. They're not going to have depth. So they may have missed their window. Now, that doesn't mean they can't win the Super Bowl, but I'm saying this may have been their best shot to win it, all things equal. And so that's something that I'm concerned about. And we're going to see how he develops. We're going to sit there and see if he can overcome and become a drop-back passer. Now, Eddie, you haven't heard my podcast, but I talked about this with Robert Griffin III when he was going after Jay Gruden and it backfired on him. He got Shanahan fired because he says, I'm a drop-back quarterback. I'm like, no, Shanahan was saying, no, you're a read-option quarterback. You're uncomfortable in the pocket in drop-back. And that's what we saw out of Lamar. And the reason I bring that up is RG3 was like, no, I'm going to be my year one rookie year, I was a read-option quarterback, but now I'm a drop-back. It doesn't work that way. It takes time, and we're seeing that with Lamar. Final comments on the Ravens and the Chiefs in regards to the game.
I'm glad that my Chiefs won. And they showed up with that D that, you know, we've been talking about for a few weeks. And, you know, this upcoming Super Bowl is going to be, I think, a low scoring affair between both teams because they're both
active defensively.
Although the Niners D is questionable right now.
And we'll break the game down next week. I just want to talk about it because we have
a gap
here. Yeah. So no, just for the audience, we're going to break that down next week, but let's go to the big game. Cause the Chiefs game was exciting, but it was kind of like pretty steady. It wasn't like ups and downs.
Right.
The Niners Lions game, boy, that was like, that had you on the edge of your seats. And I don't know why, but it seemed like the crowd was louder there than it was for the Ravens game. But, exciting game. I think Brock Purdy showed up. I told you last week this has become a big race issue with a lot of African Americans hating on Brock Purdy for whatever reason. But it was a flip of the switch. Brock Purdy put the team on his back.
Absolutely.
You know, a game manager does not scramble and run for the first down. A game manager does not fight and rip himself loose from a potential sack and get a first down. A game manager does not start running with the ball and throw it. What you're thinking is going to be an interception and a receiver makes a great leap to catch it. Brock Purdy put that team on his back and he came away proving his counters wrong. And the reason I say that is Ryan Clark, Shannon Sharp, a bunch of these people who were arguing against him and all over Lamar, and they were directly comparing the two, hating on Purdy and saying how Lamar doesn't get any love. They flipped the script. They're all now showing love to Brock Purdy. And I think this love should have been shown to Brock Purdy the whole time because many systems, whether Green Bay, whether San Francisco, whether New England, as we saw with Brady, you get the quarterback that follows them. Just because they're in the system doesn't mean they're going to succeed. You're a 49ers fan. Remember Jim Druckenmiller? You're going to inherit the team. He was a bust. So my point is they put a lot of hate, just the hate, on Brock Purdy and calling him assistant quarterback. It was the easy way to hate on him, the easy way to legitimize that he's just an average guy. At the end of the day, Joe Montana was an average guy who won three Super Bowls, you know?
Right.
So, what did you think of Brock Purdy before we get into the numbers this game?
Brock Purdy, I think we are seeing potentially the second coming of a Joe Montana-like type player. And I would say even a Tom Brady. He just has that it factor. And I know it's pretty controversial what I'm saying right now, but how many kids in their second year, and it's not really their second year, it's really a year and a half that he's been playing as the starting quarterback for the 49ers, a very storied franchise in terms of quarterback. Right. There's a lot of pressure for being a starting quarterback on the 49ers. And this kid came in here and showed the moxie that he belongs. And the guy has essentially showed up and proven all of these naysayers wrong. He's not a system quarterback. It's easy to say that because of the squad, the roster that the Niners have. I mean, they are talented. They're probably from the top down, probably the most talented roster in the NFL by far. I think they have, seven all pros on that team. So they are just stacked. So it's easy to go ahead and say that he's a system quarterback because of all the talent the Niners have. But the one thing that they were knocking on him is that they haven't seen Brock Purdy come back from behind and carry a team. Well, he just did it in probably the biggest game of his career when the Niners desperately needed, you know, somebody like him to take them and bring them forward because they were down 17 points and it was looking pretty bleak. And they found a way to do it and turn it around at halftime. Who knows what was said at halftime, what happened, but this team turned around. They woke up and they showed up. And it's because of, mostly in part because of Brock Purdy.
Now, give the Lions credit, because even Kyle Shanahan said when they came out in the second half, he's like, we got to do it. And then he's like, and we get a field goal. He's like, oh boy, this could be hard, you know. And yet, then they exploded. And Brock Purdy was the key to that. I mean, he scrambled out of the sack, threw that dart to fullback Kyle. How do you say his name?
Juszczyk.
I mean, and that's pretty nimble for a big bulky fullback to make the catches he did. Purdy had went 5 for 48. 9.6 yards per carry. He made critical plays with his legs. Now, I wrote down in my notes, won the game with under 5 minutes left and scrambled it for a critical first down. I'm not going to say he won the game for them, but that was a first down that kind of was one of the nails in the coffin for the Lions. And Purdy, and he did not slide. He goes, I want every damn yard and dove, you know. So he doesn't benefit from the Niners and the players around him. They benefit one another. They're like a yin and yang. Everybody wants to make it like, oh, he benefits from that team. No, they feed off each other. He makes the players around him better, and the players around him and the schemes make him better. So he showed that he can be a playmaker. He overcame himself. He had a poor first half, was embarrassed on national television by the Ravens. So he had a lot of pressure to overcome himself. Absolutely. And the perception that was building about him. He didn't let the interception flabbergast him, and he moved on to have a great second half. And I put in my notes, see Lamar Jackson, because he couldn't overcome his own mental errors. He threw passes on the run. That's not what a game manager does. And he, as you said, he was in the biggest – I put down the second biggest game of his career, because technically for the first couple of minutes he was in the biggest game of his career last year before he tore his arm up. I'm being facetious. I don't know what that word means, but it sounds like it fits in there. I forget what it means, facetious. You know, but my point is, I'm not even a Brock Purdy fan, but I give Lamar Jackson credit. I love Patrick Mahomes, even though I don't like the Chiefs. You know, I love Russell Wilson. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks. It's like, just, I love the position. I love to see players make plays, but instead we go tribal. You know, got to look at it from a stupid perspective. So I'm happy for Purdy, not because he's an Anglo quarterback who proved his naysayers wrong. It's because he's living the American dream. We all grow up wanting to be Brock Purdy, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, all these great players. So that's why I rooted for him. Look, now, before we close it out here in the next few minutes, let's talk about the Lions and the controversy. First of all, the Lions struggled with fundamentals with some poor tackling. That said, Chase Young, boy, he looked like the Lions the way he was standing around for the 49ers. But that's neither here nor there. The Lions struggled with fundamentals. They struggled with mental errors. That punt where the guy stepped into the end zone when they had him at the 1 or 2 yard line, the drop passes. They struggled with themselves. They put their pride ahead of common sense. And let's get to the fourth down decisions. Look, I'm an analytics guy. My company was directly responsible for helping make analytics a key point now in today's game. Analytics are part of your tactics. Where you implement your strategy, analytics are part of the tactics used to implement the strategy. All these freaking couch potato morons, well, the 0.2% says this play works every time. No. There's also the game in context. Dan Campbell could have kicked the field goal and made it a 3-score game. Do you know? And these armchair quarterbacks who never play sports, who their only sport they play is Madden, 4th and 15, and they throw a pass. That is how their minds work. You know, in the context of an actual game, a team that is down 3 scores with only a quarter and a half, that is morally deflating. You know?
For sure. For sure.
So I don't agree with Dan Campbell's, this is how we played all season. Yeah, because you can get away with it when you're playing the Chicago Bears. You can get away with it when you're playing the Atlanta Falcons. You can get away with it when you're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can get away with it when you're playing the New England Patriots. You can't get away with it when you're playing the Dallas Cowboys. As we saw, 3 second 2-point conversions, you failed and you lost the game. You failed you're going forward on 2 fourth downs and you lost the game. You can't do that and come back and win against better teams. And these analytic assholes don't want to acknowledge the reality of the game at hand in that moment. And I get angry because I'm an analytics guy and I'm like, you're a moron. You're looking at the analytics wrong. It's like that little point right there does not give you the right to make a decision that covers everything. And that's what happened. So instead of going up by 3, deflating the Niners and taking control of the game, they gave life back to the Niners. Some moron said, well, if Reynolds had made the catch, I'm like, well, right before that, he said, well, you can't trust a kicker. You may not have made the kick. I'm like, it's you're saying if Reynolds had made the catch, then you would have looked like a genius. But you didn't want to take a chance on making the kick because your analytics said that he was going to miss the kick despite the overall percentage being 75% of kickers make that kick. You see, so they pick and choose which analytics they want to look at without looking at the obvious. Dan Campbell lost them that game. And if Dan Campbell does not want to learn from that, that's who we are. Well, buddy, you got tougher competition in the playoffs than you do in the regular season. And if he doesn't mature, I predict he will be fired within 2 years. And when I say mature, you can't be a stupid oaf like he was and just keep going for it. And they say, that's who we are. Because you yourself, Dan Campbell, said, this may be our only shot. Then you play like it's your only shot and you play smartly. You know, right. I guess I'm just tired of these analytic facts. Armchair quarterbacks, and they're only 22, and they look like Fat Albert Jr., you know? And they're just sickening to me. I'm just tired of it. And I'm digressing here, but it just sickens me. Because I embrace analytics. I'm an analytics guy, but analytics, the universe does not revolve analytics. They are just an arrow in your quiver that's a bigger arrow than most. But they are just an arrow in your quiver. The guy shooting the arrow still has a responsibility to make the right call, and too many of these head coaches are using analytics as their excuse. If I'm the Detroit Lions owner, Dan Campbell leaves that morning meeting with an asshole so big you could drive a truck through it after the chewing out I give him for making those bonehead decisions. That's my take, Eddie. What's yours before we close it out?
He's a rookie head coach, man. You know, he's going to learn. I mean, he has a lot of pride. He just probably didn't want to, you know, come across like he's second-guessing himself. Although I know deep down inside, you know, he realizes it. He'll come back and learn from it and be a better coach for it. He already was a pretty good coach in getting this team to where it was at. They couldn't have done it without this guy. So, you know, he's going to learn. We got to give him some credit where he got them there and, you know, he learns from his mistakes, and I think he will.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's it. But Eddie, he's got to learn from his mistakes. He would not take responsibility for those fourth down calls, and that's a red flag. You know, that happened to me with Denny Green. I shut down a press conference at the Combine because I asked that fool what he learned from his Minnesota not being able to get to the Super Bowl after being so close, and what he learned from that experience, and that he was going to take over for the Arizona Cardinals. He looked at me. Threw his arms up and turned around and walked off. And I'm like, everybody's looking at me. Who's this little asshole here who just shut this press conference? And I wrote an article. I said, Denny Green is going to get fired within the next 2 years from the Arizona Cardinals because he's learned nothing. He's going to make the same mistakes. and he's going to keep losing when it matters. And that's what happened. Remember his saying, we knew who they were. Well, Danny, I knew who you were, you loser. You know, rest in peace, Danny. Yeah. God, you rest in peace. He passed away. Yeah. But anyway, that's our show for the night. Sorry to have gone off on the tangent there, but I'm just sick and tired of armchair quarterbacks who never play the game. I never played the game, Eddie. I was too small. But I always appreciated and loved the game. You know, and my final comment is, I'm not putting the whole blame on Dan Campbell. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs, costly fumble, and wide receiver Josh Reynolds dropped the ball two key times. So you lose as a team, you win as a team. And in this case, the game wasn't just lost on the field, but on the sidelines with monumental, stupid decisions. And I don't say that to be mean. I say that to learn from it, Dan. We've all done our stupid. How many times have we woken up from that drunken stupor the next day? Oh, my God. And you never repeat that stupidity because you learn from it. As a sailor, I learned. And my friends, that's our show for tonight. We're going to break the game down very heavily next week. We're going to talk more basketball. Eventually we're going to start talking some baseball because baseball season is coming along. But Eddie, it's always a pleasure to have you on as a guest to break down basketball for us. And to America and the rest of the world, do not forget, you can go to grumblingsmedia.com for this podcast, our political podcast, and our entertainment podcast. You can also find us on YouTube and Rumble under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google. Until next time, my friends, Eddie and I bid you adieu.